This is West Virginia Morning. I'm Beth Voorhees. Members of Congress are one step closer to approving a long-term highways funding bill after senators voted on two amendments yesterday. The chamber approved an amendment to reauthorize the nation's Import-Export Bank. The federally run bank finances and insures foreign purchases of U.S.-made goods. Members also voted against an amendment that would have repealed the Affordable Care Act. Today, senators will continue debating the six-year funding measure for the country's highways and bridges. But with federal funds set to expire on July 31st, governors from across the country are becoming more and more frustrated with the slow progress in Washington. As Ashton Mara reports, many states are finding their own solutions, solutions that could work in West Virginia.
The Senate stands adjourned until 2 p.m. tomorrow.
Acting as chair, Georgia Senator David Perdue closed the Sunday afternoon session on the U.S. Senate floor after votes on two amendments to the federal highways funding bill. If approved, the bill would extend funding for construction projects for 6 years, replenishing the highways trust fund, which will run out of money Friday. The federal fund is made up of the taxes Americans pay on both gasoline and diesel fuel, rates that haven't increased since 1993. The stagnant rates, combined with more fuel-efficient vehicles that use less gas, are causing the fund to become insolvent.
I have to stop somewhere about 350 road projects immediately. It costs us about $1.2 billion immediately. It would be a disaster.
Virginia Democratic Governor Terry McAuliffe was one of 24 governors, including our own Governor Earl Ray Tomlin, who attended the National Association of Governors annual summer meeting at the Greenbrier in White Sulphur Springs over the weekend. And although road funding wasn't on the agenda, it wasn't far from anyone's mind.
I'm hoping Congress will get their act together and start to make some decisions to give us at the state level some certainty. We can't build roads, we can't deal with these issues of congestion if we don't know there's a long-term funding source there.
McAuliffe's word, certainty. It's one that came up a lot as governors were asked about the future of infrastructure in their states.
We need some predictability.
Kentucky's Governor Steve Beshear shared McAuliffe's sentiments, but Beshear, a Democrat, is less certain Congress will indeed come up with the long-term solution his senator, Senate Republican Majority Leader Mitch McConnell, is working toward.
My guess is, unfortunately, that like they usually do, they'll just kick the can down the road, pass some short-term thing, and then we'll have to go through this all again in the next few months.
The last time Congress took up a bill to fund the nation's highway trust fund was May, just 2 months ago. Lately, temporary solutions coming from Congress are not uncommon, and that's why some states are taking matters into their own hands. In South Dakota, Republican Governor Dennis Dugard this year did something many call unthinkable in West Virginia. His state raised the gas tax to pay for road construction and maintenance.
We raised our gas tax by 6 cents a gallon. We raised our vehicle excise tax from 3% to 4%. That's a sales tax when you purchase a vehicle. We also raised our license plate fees, and all those dollars will be aggregated and spent in part on state and U.S. highways and in part on county roads and bridges.
The American Petroleum Institute reports with the raise in state taxes, South Dakota's gas tax is still about 4.5 cents less than West Virginia's. Nationally, Dugard says he sees the reluctance of Congress to raise the federal gas tax, but
I don't think there was a lot of angst from our citizens in South Dakota when we raised our gas tax. It's the workhorse of the Federal Highway Trust Fund, and the unwillingness of Congress to look at that as a part of the solution is actually surprising to me.
Obviously, with vehicles traveling more miles per gallon, we have to look toward alternative sources for funding.
Democratic Governor Kate Brown of Oregon says for her state, that alternative source is a vehicle miles traveled tax. For now, the pilot program is voluntary and limited to just 5,000 cars. Those cars will be fitted with a mileage tracker and charged 1.5 cents per mile traveled. For now, Brown says she isn't necessarily recommending the program to other governors because she doesn't know if it will be a success. But, she says, it's worth a shot. Something Republican Governor Pat McCrory is giving a shot in his state of North Carolina is something lawmakers in West Virginia are also considering, a road bond.
I've got a $2.8 billion bond proposal for roads and infrastructure that I hope to have on the ballot by November so I can speed up the construction of roads that have been delayed for decades. So I'm moving on with or without the federal government, knowing that we have a responsibility.
Here at home, the solution for West Virginia's funding problem has yet to be found. Governor Tomlin says he, too, hopes Congress can find a long-term solution. But like McCrory, he's not waiting. He met with Senate President Bill Cole and House Speaker Tim Armstead to talk about possible solutions last month.
I've asked both the Speaker and the President, go back to their members, see what you think that you can get passed in your House. You know, some of them, are certain things that just absolutely not, one side will say. What I'm hoping to do, if there are those things that the two houses can agree to, my office can agree to, that we could join together on a bipartisan basis and try to raise some additional money.
But to try to raise some additional money in an election year, that one could be a tough sell for a Republican Party that's got a slim majority in the Senate, and even tougher for Democrats who want to win that majority back in both chambers. For West Virginia Public Broadcasting, I'm Ashton Mara in White Sulphur Springs.
Meanwhile, the U.S. Senate will return to debate the federal transportation funding bill this afternoon. In order to prevent the expiration of federal funds for roads, the bill would have to pass the Senate, the House of Representatives, and be signed by the President by Friday. Leadership in the House has expressed disapproval of the Senate bill. This is West Virginia Morning. It's 7:50. Some fog this morning, becoming partly cloudy today. There's a chance of some rain and thunderstorms moving in this afternoon. Highs in the 80s. Partly cloudy skies tonight with another chance of rain and thunderstorms. Lows in the 60s. Continued partly sunny on Tuesday with another chance of rain and thunderstorms in the southeast. Highs tomorrow in the 80s and low 90s.
Support for our weather forecast is provided by Erie Insurance, putting service first since 1925. Local agents available at erieinsurance.com.
Seventy years ago, a soldier from West Virginia died trying to liberate the Netherlands from the Nazis. A Dutch man has been tending the soldier's grave and trying to find out more about him. As Jesse Wright explains, the story has caught the attention of a filmmaker.
Martin Vossen remembers his grandmother telling him stories as a child about what it was like to live in the Netherlands under Nazi rule. But he also learned from other family members about the bars of chocolate and the smiles the Americans brought with them when they liberated the country in 1944. Vossen's grandmother died when he was 8, but her stories grew into a fascination about the war.
Then I heard that you could adopt a grave at the American military cemetery in Margraten.
In 2002, when Vossen was 13 years old, he did adopt one of the 8,300 graves in the cemetery to look after. In fact, all of the graves in the cemetery have been adopted.
When I saw that name on that cross, on the white marble cross, James Wickline, I knew he was someone, you know, who sacrificed his life for my freedom, for the freedom of the Netherlands.
Vossen began researching the soldier buried under the cross. He got Wickline's personnel file from the U.S. Total Army Personnel Command in 2003.
It contained a lot of information, like personal letters from his mother, expressing her anxiety to American authorities and asking for more information, any information there would be about her only son, which was, kind of emotional. And that was also something that really kept me going on this search.
Vossen found out that Private First Class James Wickline grew up as an only child in a small mining community outside Morgantown called Scott's Run. Wickline enlisted in the Army after high school, eventually joining the 508th Parachute Infantry Regiment. Wickline was one of the first casualties of an ambitious attempt to invade Nazi-occupied Holland called Operation Market Garden. Wickline's parachute failed to open when he jumped out of a Douglas C-47 transport plane on September 17, 1944. He was just 21 years old. The goal of the operation was to drop in behind German lines to secure a bridgehead across the River Rhine so ground troops could invade Germany.
We're going to fly 35,000 men 300 miles and drop them behind enemy lines. It'll be the largest airborne operation ever mounted. This kind of thing's never been attempted before.
The operation was documented in the 1977 movie A Bridge Too Far. The initial mission failed, but it did eventually lead to the liberation of the Netherlands and became a jumping-off point for the Allied invasion of Germany. But getting Wicklein's personnel file left Vossen wanting to know more. What did he look like? Where did he go to school? What was life like for him growing up? So Vossen visited West Virginia in 2012. He rented a car and drove around Morgantown in the Elkins area, where Wicklein's family moved after the war. He chased down a few leads, but
unfortunately, I left with as many questions as I came with.
Vossen didn't give up. When he got home to the Netherlands, he contacted the Intermountain newspaper in Elkins. A reporter there wrote an article about the search and eventually got Vossen his first picture of Wicklein. Vossen made another trip to West Virginia last year. This time he was able to speak with one of the neighbors of Wicklein's parents and found out that Wicklein went to University High School in Morgantown. The school has since moved across town, but with help from school officials, Vossen found a copy of Wicklein's yearbook and other documents. Vossen says that as he found out more about Wicklein, he felt a deepening connection to the young soldier. He wanted to give Wicklein a life beyond a name on a cemetery cross.
It's kind of that you want to change, you know, the history. You want to change his life. You want to give him the life, you know, that he just got back after the Second World War, got married, got children, you know, things like that. I wanted to create that. I wanted to make the impossible possible because it's just so, you know, it's just so sad that he has never really experienced that.
Vossen's desire to record Wicklein's story is becoming a reality. Documentary filmmaker Maren Poels heard about Vossen's story through a member of the Dutch parliament. Poels was skeptical at first because he had never been interested in stories about war, but decided to give Vossen a call anyway.
I think the first minute it hits home. It's a connection, a friendship between two people from a completely different time.
He says he was struck by the emotional bond Vossen has with Wicklein.
When I'm talking to Martin, he's talking about, you know, like a father figure. About James, you know, trying to extend the life what James never experienced. I fell in love with this story.
Poels decided to make a film about Vossen and his quest to find out more about Wicklein, called Ageless Friends. But beyond the bond between the two men, Poels says the story is a way to talk about war in a larger context.
Finally, we've got a sort of ambassador to translate the story of Second World War, all these veterans, what is war about? What is freedom? What is democracy? We found a very good ambassador to bring that story on, you know, a younger generation, because I think the world needs an understanding of freedom and democracy.
Poels traveled to West Virginia with Vossen in early July of this year to retrace his steps. They stayed with Monongalia County Commissioner Tom Bloom. Bloom has helped Vossen in his search since 2012. He says Vossen's desire to tell Wicklein's story struck a chord with the Morgantown community.
What Martin has done through his determination and his headstrong stubbornness, which I think is great, has gotten people to realize we can never forget.
Bloom headed up a successful legislative effort to rename a bridge in Scott's Run for James Wicklein. The naming ceremony was held in July, so Vossen got to witness the creation of a permanent monument to Wicklein. It's a reflection of the bridge Vossen has built between the past and the present, and between one nation that feels indebted to another for its liberation. For West Virginia Public Broadcasting, I'm Jesse Wright in Morgantown.
And to see a 3-minute preview of the film, visit our website, wvpublic.org. The film will be released early next year. West Virginia Morning is a production of West Virginia Public Broadcasting, which is solely responsible for its content. Keep up with all the latest West Virginia news throughout the day on our website, wvpublic.org. Support for our news bureaus comes from Shepherd University, West Virginia University, Marshall University, and Concord University. Our producer is Ashton Mara. Our director is Teresa Wills. I'm Beth Voorhees.